Avatar, The Way of Water is over, but we are just getting started talking about it in spoilerific detail here on Poe Show Recap as continuing coverage of the Avatar sequel continues here on Poe Show Recap. Hello, everybody. I am Josh Wigler. I see my co-hosts for this occasion of talking about Avatar some more, starting with Grace. How are you, Grace?
Oh, I'm doing great. Just gonna sync up my braid here with the podcast. This is great.
Yes. Ariel is also here plugging into the podcast.
I see you. And Grace also.
I see you. I see you both. We see you out there listening to this Avatar spoiler deep dive. If you are listening to this podcast, we assume you have seen The Way of Water, that you are one of the many that contributed to a successful opening weekend for James Cameron's Avatar, depending on the metrics by which you measure success, which we'll talk a little bit about the box office of what's going on with Avatar right now. We are recording this on Monday, December 19th, on the other side of opening weekend of Avatar. We'll do a little bit of very amateur, business-minded box office thingies here that probably don't actually add up to anything that makes much sense, but we'll try. And then we're going to do all the spoilers, everything that we have lingering questions about, our favorite parts of the movie. We did our spoiler-free version of the podcast, which you can go back and listen to in the Poster Recaps Theater feed if you haven't seen the movie yet or you just want to get those baseline takes first. And then in this one, we're going to go into the full thing. So here we are on the other side of opening weekend, Grace. One of our chief film critics here on Poe Show Recaps, how did those box office numbers look to you?
I mean, okay, objectively, $134 million is a lot of money.
And that's just domestic, right?
That's just domestic. I think it made about $434 million
worldwide.
I guess $300 internationally. So, yeah. But that's a bit of a disappointment. It's not the highest grossing movie of the opening weekend of the year, which it feels like it would have had to be in order for it to be able to make as much money as it needs to be. As James Cameron has said, it needs to be the third or fourth highest grossing movie in the history of film to be able to make its money back, to break even. So yeah, that seems not great if internationally it's doing as well as Doctor Strange. So
yes.
Yeah.
Ariel, it's the fifth best opening of the year for Avatar: The Way of Water.
Incredible. I mean, first, I just want to say I am actually speaking the native Na'vi language, but through the magic of
subtitles,
movies, the subtitles have disappeared, and you are now able to magically understand me.
And I am speaking whale now. And so if you can hear me out there in listener land, that means we really have connected on that spirit sibling level, which is great.
Yes. This, like Grace said, it's objectively, it's great. But in the context of what it's supposed to do and what they want it to do, it's feeling very mid. Like, the returns aren't great.
Yeah.
Like, enough. It's not like a disappointment. It certainly didn't bomb. But as far as like keeping on a certain track for where they want it to get, I would say that they're cautiously concerned, perhaps.
Sure. So Box Office Mojo, which I think is a really great resource for this stuff, they have like somewhere between a like cynical and realistic outlook on the situation.
And that, they got a pun in there. They got a pun. So
what was the pun? Oh, that
dives in with below expectations.
Yeah, that's good. Avatar: The Way of Water dives in. We love that. Should we rename this a deep dive?
Yeah, we probably should have.
A belly flop.
All right, I'll go
back. Oh, that would have been
good.
The
record. Ooh,
yeah. We should write headlines.
If it flopped, if it belly flopped. So Box Office Mojo is saying that if the movie ends up playing like The Batman, which went on to gross $360 million domestically, it would hard to be to not be underwhelmed by the performance of Avatar, even putting aside its allegedly gargantuan budget. Such a finish would be less than half of the first Avatar's $750 million cumulative in its original release. That's the domestic numbers. Box Office Mojo goes on to say, however, if playing closer to Top Gun Maverick, which had a 5.7 multiplier and grossed $719 million, it's not out of the question which would consequently put it in the league of Cameron's other box office smashes. Ending up somewhere in between seems like the likeliest bet, but it's ultimately too early to make any calls on this one. That last bit is probably the most salient point, that when you go back and you look at how Avatar performed originally in its very first year in theaters, when the first movie came out, it was like a long play. It wasn't like this huge, immediate, like record annihilating thing. It was a real case of longevity. So whether or not that's going to be the case here with The Way of Water, where there's no major blockbusters until I think Quantumania in February, there's a chance here for Avatar to really linger and word of mouth to build. And who knows what that's going to turn into.
I mean, I agree. I do feel though, it feels like the story had to, it needed a big opening weekend in order to then, like, bigger than this probably, to then justify the word of mouth. Because I think the thing that the first Avatar had going for it, it was such a spectacle. It was very unique. The beauty of it, and not that this movie isn't, you know, as stunning as the first one, in some ways, I think more stunning. I don't know that it has the same sort of like, you got to see it, mentality. I feel like I'm going to give a shout out, Josh, I know you won't like this, but to Kevin Mahadeo, who I was talking to offline. And he was like, I feel like the premiere buzz was a little bit overhyped. And he had no basis for that other than that he thought it was like a little bit of a marketing appeal. And I feel like the fact that this movie comes in a little bit underwhelming is proof of that. Like, I feel like they were really hoping people would go out and see this immediately, because I feel like there was so much Twitter hype the day that the premiere happened, and I saw almost nothing on my feed about Twitter this past weekend for this movie, which feels not great in terms of it being something that people are going to continue to go see.
There were some other things happening on Twitter this past weekend that have dwarfed the Avatar chatter. Is a possibility.
The World Cup, is that what you mean?
That's not the only thing that happened, but that also did happen. Ariel, do you think it is possible that the current performance of Avatar The Way of Water is the reason why James Cameron flipped off his fans recently at a Hollywood screening of Avatar The Way of Water?
Who knows why James Cameron does anything he does, but yes. I don't think it helped. He was probably feeling a little angry. I think Grace made a really good point that the kind of, and whether people realize it or not, like the kind of effect that even just these headlines of, okay, it did really well, but it's not performing that well, affect how you will or will not recommend a movie, how you even just yourself feel about a movie going forward. Like, I'm a person who sees, Grace knows this, and you know this a little bit, Josh, I like to see things multiple times.
Sure.
And I will see this movie again, but I didn't rush out to see it again this past weekend.
So I wonder how much that's going to come into play here. So I don't think that this is a done story. I think that the next weekend is going to tell us a lot. It's Christmas weekend. It's holiday weekend. A lot of people like to go and see the movies around this time. Is this going to have something of like at least a relatively close hold? I think will be interesting. Just to the point of James Cameron flipping off his fans, because I thought this was ridiculous. TMZ has this story. James Cameron flips the bird to autograph seekers after Avatar screening.
That's the third one. Is Avatar flipping the bird?
Yes. Flip the bird. Yeah, flip the Make bird. The bond. Flip the bird. That's sort of
right. Is it an earth?
He does that in the first one. He like flips around.
That's how you have to get the bird in the first place.
Is it like an earth bird?
Earth birds. The earth birds are easy, I heard.
The one other thing I wanted to say, I feel like there is just this thing too of like, there is the like, I'm just going to wait for it to come be on streaming, to the point of like, when Avatar came out in this box office emoji, the rest of the box office made $61 million. The rest of the box office this year made $18 million. So just feels like people are just going to the movies less than they ever have. And that people are just like okay with waiting for it to come to streaming. And although I think this does have, not unlike many of the creatures we see in Avatar, have a long tail, I think, in theaters, I think also people are just totally willing to be like, I'll just watch it at home.
Yeah, sure, but what if it has a short tail like Jake Sully's clan is accused of having?
They have little skinny tails. They have skinny tails,
little tiny tails that they may have. That's how
five
it's doing.
Fingers. So do you think he, like James Cameron, used one of his...
Oh, yeah.
I guess he has normal human fingers.
Like, he does. It's so hard when you only have... when you have four fingers to give the... I guess when you have the
middle finger,
I guess Yeah, when you have four total fingers, it's hard to get the middle.
The middle of the three, but
yeah,
it is the middle of the three. But yeah.
Is this the effect of like the Disneyfication of Avatar? You give all of the Na'vi on Pandora only four fingers, so they literally cannot flip the bird.
Yeah, that's right.
That's probably right. It. That's the Disney effect. No, it predates Disney. Come on, it's a joke. All right, let's.
I was wondering. I'm like,
let's talk about.
I want this new character, John, where every time you defend on, making a joke. Come on, that's a joke. Yeah,
it's a joke. All right, we're talking about The Way of Water. We're going to talk about all the spoilers from the movie. This is your final warning. Okay, so in The Way of Water, it is essentially about a family that gets self-exiled from the jungles of Pandora because Miles Quaritch, who asked for this, he's back in Avatar form, baby, because he was able to send his memories back to Earth to be implanted in a Na'vi that was being grown for Miles Quaritch, as well as the rest of the Marine squad here. And this was the thing that I was saying on our spoiler-free podcast that really kind of broke my brain, Grace. Uh-huh. So let me just try and get this straight. So they were growing an Avatar body for Miles and yes. the rest of the Marine team. Blue Team is what they end up being called. And so they're able to send his memories back to his Avatar form and basically clone him this way. Now, the entire premise of the Avatar films, if I'm not mistaken, is that Sam Worthington has a twin brother who is shot and killed prematurely. And as a result, this genetic clone, the Avatar body, is useless unless they give it to Jake Sully and not his brothers, so the military-minded version of the Sully brothers. And so he goes and he becomes Jake Sully, Toruk Makto, savior of Pandora. But shouldn't they have probably just had like a memory upload of the scientist brother? Shouldn't that have been a thing if they have that technology? And then should Jake Sully not have been flown to Pandora in the first place? They could have just flown clone scientist in the first place?
I think Thomas Sully, Jake Sully's brother, dying and then them not having a memory upload is what makes them think, oh my God, we better download everybody's memories. This is like when your computer crashes for the first time and you're like, oh my God, I didn't back anything up.
This is a rite of passage as a podcaster too. You record a podcast and you suddenly realize that you didn't record it at all. Yeah. And now you have to redo the podcast. If you haven't encountered that yet, podcasters, you will.
No.
It's coming.
Yeah,
it's a real thing. You all have to go through it.
I wonder if people could figure out just based on like clues which podcast I'm doing for the second time, because I definitely did one this year where I was doing it for the second time.
It happens to the best of us.
I don't think a plot hole here. I think they just they weren't doing it for Jake, and then they were or for Tom, and then they were like, we better do this for everybody.
Yeah. Ariel, plot hole, or does Grace have the hole filled?
No, I think Grace has got it. I think it's easily explained, which knocks points off the movie for not inserting like the one sentence explanation that it would have taken.
Agreed.
But yeah. I think because a certain amount of time has passed between movie one and movie two, a certain amount of years, I think it makes sense that they were like, oh yeah, let's just make up this technology that can do that. That would have made the first thing like obsolete.
Yeah, I mean, I think it even would have been nice to know, like, to get it in the movie. But like, yeah, we decided that this is a protocol we're going to do after the death of Tom Sully. And then you can kind of connect, like, oh, man, the Sully legacy really sullied everything up.
Giovanna Ribisi shows up for, like, 5 minutes in this movie. They could have had him do one extra line of dialogue to, like, explain this all away.
Five minutes is such a generous designation. Very generous, of how much Giovanni Ribisi you get in this movie. But it's a great little cameo, him with slang in slang. Being like, if you're anything like me, you're going to be after some revenge against Jake Sully. I really enjoyed getting this exposition via flip cam. I liked all of the references to what was happening in the original timeline of Avatar that you get. Like, you got a little more Sigourney Weaver in this as, like, actual Sigourney Weaver than I expected, I felt like.
You get Norm Spellman as Norm Spellman in the and maybe flirting with Grace Augustine. Yeah.
There's some questions as to whether or not Norm Spellman is Kiri's father, which I found to be highly inappropriate and not cool.
I agree. Like, look at him flirting with her at work. You're like, oh, no.
It's possible that they don't understand the implications of what they're saying here, but it's not great. Not great.
I love the exposition is so funny because he has to do it. And he's like Miles Quaritch, that is, where he's just like, if you're watching this, it's because I'm dead. But I'm not gonna die.
I'm not gonna die.
You definitely died, dude. You died. You died, man.
Definitely. I'll talk to you as emphatically as I can, as if you see this, if you never see this, it's gonna be a real waste of my energy right now. Because God, I'm angry.
I love it.
Yeah. And yeah, you're never gonna find my skull in the jungle. And if you do, you're definitely not gonna just crush it in your hand.
Don't crush it in your hand. I need that.
Save that thing.
I did appreciate that there was so much exposition in the beginning as far as like things that we were expecting to learn, you know, like how is Stephen Lang going to be in this movie and how much time has passed. It's handled like very quickly off the bat so that your brain is no longer distracted by those things, and then you can just kind of enjoy the movie after that.
Yeah So they get it done really quickly. We also get like the big montage of what's happened between the first film and this one, namely that Jake and Neytiri have had a fairly robust family in this time. They've had two sons, Natium and Loak. They also have Took, who is Grace's favorite. They have adopted Kiri, who was born from Grace's avatar body. Not Grace's, but Grace's. And no one really knows how. And there's the big question of like, who is Kiri's actual father? And just to like sidebar on that, because I feel like, why not do this now? It's Awa, right? Like, she is the child of the planet.
Yeah, it feels like Immaculate Conception, you know, that this is like meant to be. I don't know if there's another satisfying answer on the board. Like, there's nobody.
Can I
think
one?
Oh, yes, please.
I have an idea. You ready?
Yes.
Her real father, Emperor Palpatine.
Oh, that's a good one.
No.
Sorry. It's her grandfather.
The dead speak. Yeah. I don't want this,
yeah.
Tosh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she has big, like, you know, there is big religious energy going on with Kiri in this movie in terms of like how connected she is to all the nature. So, I do think Awa being her father is.
And they attempt like a scientific explanation of what's going on with Kiri. Like, she's epileptic. She's not able to like plug into the planet, and like it's classic frontal lobe. I wasn't really following, but we could get Drs. Amanda and Melissa on the line and maybe see if they could instruct us on what's happening with Kiri. So I liked the attempt of doing a little bit of science versus faith with what's going on with her. And I also really liked, Ariel, that they didn't tell us definitively what's going on with Kiri. This is like we're going to string this mystery along throughout the franchise, and I'm fine with that. Like, this is a fun story to follow along, and if it means that you have long-term plans for the teenage Sigourney Weaver, yeah, absolutely. String us along as far as it can go.
She's so angsty in a way that I absolutely love. And yeah, string me along like the strings on the end of my tail. I absolutely like that we both do not get an explanation as to the origins of her conception and the way any rules or parameters for how her powers, in quotes, seem to work. We literally get a shot of two characters watching her kind of I don't know, like Jean Grey her way through like controlling these animals underwater to like do a thing. And then they look at each other like, well, that's not normal. But then whatever, there's too much action. We have to continue through the movie. I love that that's kind of all that we get.
Yeah.
Kiri does so much eye rolling. I think there's like four scenes where it's just a close up of her eye rolling. It's the best. I love
that's
it.
What I'm saying, the angst. I
need to see like the whatever like the Disney Plus featurette is going to be of the making of Avatar 2. I need to see grown adult Sigourney Weaver playing teenage Kiri. I need to know what that was like on set, especially with her like working with the young actors and everything and just being like, come on, in like extreme Sigourney Weaver voice, but also with shades of Bart Simpson. Great stuff. Great stuff. Best character in the movie for sure for me is Kiri.
Mm.
That's
I agree.
It. No Kiri fans in there.
Kiri. I don't know if she's
no
a favorite character.
No disrespect to Spider.
You know.
I know. There's a lot of Spider love in the podcast.
Spider love. We are apparently an outlier. I don't know if you've heard this, Ariel, but Spider is not beloved.
Can you walk through what's up with Spider in the culture?
Yeah, I was listening to some podcasts, and I was on some Reddit and some Discords, and Spider is really not liked. I think mostly it stems from, so I think there's a little bit of like cultural appropriation, you know, whatever. We can get it to that later. But yeah, you know, who cares? He was raised with this, you know, it's a, you know, raised by wolves in a sense. And then he does save Miles Quaritch at the end of the movie. And so I feel like people are like, ah, oh, you saved the oppressor. But like, come on, it's his dad, is kind of his dad, not really his dad. They really do a lot in this movie, Josh, to just be like, that is his son, but also it's very much not his son. Like, so many characters are like, we're not actually related by blood. But yeah, there's people are not liking Spider, and there is some belief that Spider is perhaps the big bad
of
the whole Avatar franchise.
No.
Ariel, along came a spider.
No spiders.
Yeah.
I love the dynamic specifically between Spider and Slider. No, what's his name? Slang. Sliders from original Top Gun. Slang and Spider, I was ready to hate it. I was like, this is so dumb. I don't care about their emotional connection or lack thereof. But it was so sweet and tragic and awful. Like, I caught my, at one point, I got emotional just thinking about like, how Spider is basically Theon in a way. Like, it's not apples to apples, but like,
yes,
in the way that like, you left me, or you know, you gave me away, whatever, you left me, and now all I have is this. Like, what am I supposed to do? I kept anticipating that like Jake's children would kind of take Spider to task for why he was helping
Quaritch,
his father. Yeah. Quaritch, yeah. Basically, but like, it was like, what was he supposed to do? Ostensibly, this was his own, like, if he never saw Jake's family again, this is who he was going to be with. And I thought that there was something really, really tragic and sweet and honest about like them just attempting to bond, even though they recognized like the father and son dynamic. They recognized that, yeah, maybe on paper they shouldn't be allies, but like, whatever, emotions and stuff. And we're all just human, even though, you know, Quaritch is not anymore.
Yeah. I love Spider. Got a lot of the I think for a lot of, he calls a lot of people sons of bitches in the movie. Really, I really liked a lot. I think I like Spider's pushback. And at the end, I thought it was really sweet in terms of like a found family story, which is why I really actually don't want Spider to be the big bad in the movie. Because that moment where like, yeah, he's just saved Quaritch, but he climbs back up and like hugs the, like hangs out with the family, and they're just like, yeah, come here. You know, at the beginning, he's a stray cat. I would imagine that at the end of, at the start of the next movie, he is not considered a stray cat and he's part of the family.
Well,
so.
They're gonna have to smooth things out between Spider and Neytiri, because Neytiri definitely drew blood from Spider, at least. That's true. I don't know. I kind of do think maybe she would have gone the full distance if push came to shove.
Yeah, that's
not great behavior.
Neytiri can do no wrong, in my opinion. And again, it's very like Catelyn Stark with Theon to me, or I guess more so like Jon Snow, even.
Yes, yeah,
yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ew, I don't like you, and I don't have to like you. Only my children and husband like you, but I might kill you by accident when I swipe my knife across.
Yeah.
Also, Josh, we had this. The reason why I think there has to be a time jump by the next movie is because they're definitely alluding to Kiri and Spider potentially being romantically
involved. Feels like there's
involved.
Maybe a little something
and
going
please,
on there.
Please age up Spider so that Sigourney Weaver doesn't have to play out like romance, please.
Yeah, I think that would be ideal. I agree. Yeah. Like, I don't think that Sigourney Weaver and Jack Champion should be having to like film that. So I don't know what that looks like. But also, I don't want Jack Champion to lose work. You know, so
I'd say, they filmed them back to back, right? So I don't know if they would have aged up.
Don't take money out of his pocket, right?
Yeah,
he's a champion already. You know?
That's rude. Maybe we could root instead for them to just be siblings. You know, maybe that's the way of the water to go. You know what I thought though? I kind of felt like maybe you should have given Spider some clothes once you abducted him. I feel like if they'd given him some like warmer clothes, especially once they got out to the ocean, like I can imagine, like, no, this is what I do. This is how I am. This is Pandora. Yeah. I'm used to it. This is like my thing. But he's not really used to the ocean. And I got to imagine those ocean breezes were a little cold. Yeah, like a jacket. True. I think a jacket could have gone a long way.
The water
towards
being
indoctrinating
so warm.
Spider.
Yeah.
Or at least like a heavy flannel loincloth.
Yeah.
Like, you
know, flannel loincloth.
Some sort of checkered pattern.
Oh my God, this movie could have made its money back just on selling merchandise of flannel loincloths.
Can you imagine if they gave Spider a flannel loincloth? We would all be buying them for Christmas.
I know.
The tartan? Come on.
Tis the season, you know?
Tartan.
Merry Christmas, so family. I bought you all flannel loincloths.
Is this a face mask? No.
No.
Sure isn't. So I don't know. I think that that might have helped. But the speculation that Spider is going to go bad, Spider turn off the dark. I don't think that that's where it's ultimately going to go. I feel like the general shape of this movie is probably where the general shape of the full arc Who is general shape? He's somebody who has not made his way to Bridgehead City quite.
They got his memory, though. They're going to upload
The memory.
That's who Edie Falco works for when she's not drinking coffee.
General shape, yeah. I feel like, you know, he has like some measure of him and Quaritch have some measure of connection there. And my guess would be that by the end of this thing, Quaritch will have some version of a Darth Vader-ish turn, right? Like he's going to accept being his, like, I'm not human, but I'm not Na'vi. I'm somewhere in between. I think he'll like Javert this thing and jump off of the Bridgehead City.
I saw this debate happening in the Discord between folks of like, is Quaritch our big bad for the whole thing? Or are we ready for the turn? And I don't need him to be the big bad of movie three, but
I think that he's a kind of unsatisfying big bad if he is sort of the ultimate big bad here, especially if the idea is we are the problem, humans are the problem, which is clearly a thing that's being articulated in Avatar, and I don't think wrongly, that I feel like he doesn't quite represent that anymore, unless is there something, Ariel, to the idea that like he represents humans perverting like the natural resources, and that like even once he is tapped into the power of something pure and awesome and he should be having some sort of euphoric epiphany, instead he's just still being like evil military marine guy who just shoots everything that moves.
He perverted the Na'vi.
I'm trying here.
I guess I agree with Grace in that, like, I think that would be boring. Like, I think what we have seen in this movie with some of that, like, nuance in his relationship with Spider and, like, his emotional connection. I love the moment where, like, Neytiri is hip to him and, like, takes Spider and threatens, like, a son for a son. Like, do you really want to do this? Like, test me. You know I want to kill him in general. I will just kill him for a good reason now. And then to have him genuinely emotionally react and be like, okay, no, don't hurt my son, who's not really my son, but he's my son. I think to just have him be the big bad. Yeah, I guess they could explain it. They could find a way to like make him perhaps, you know, maybe Spider dies and, you know, he turns evil, something like that. But I think,
how dare you?
The idea that for him to live in this gray area space between good and evil is way, way more interesting to me going forward, and how they could manipulate that. To whoever does, I think, ultimately become the big bad.
Yeah. I mean, the dude is stuck on Pandora now, right? Like, he's there. He doesn't have it. There's none of the... I think, like, this is, like, he gets, you know, a tribe scoops him up. He is like, oh, they're not that bad after all, huh? Like, you know,
everyone has his
accent.
We're going to solve
racism.
Like him. Yeah. Pandora.
Yeah. And, we're not in Kansas anymore. And, and then he ends up, like, working with the tribe to come in. Like, he very much, like, I think, gets redemption arc here in terms of, like, helping fight against what he brought to Pandora.
I think part of his arc needs to be some measure of self-acceptance, right? That he needs to come and realize that he is not Spider-Na'vi. He is Spider-Man.
That's right.
And that by the end of the trilogy or the quadrilogy or the quintilogy, or however far this is going to go, I think Spider needs to be able to look at himself in the mirror and be okay with who he is. So I'm interested. I like Spider. I think Spider is fun. Yeah. I remember his name now.
He's a Cameron trope. Cameron loves having these little annoying sidekicks, you know? Like,
how dare you? Newt was not annoying. John Connor was definitely kind of annoying.
Yeah. He loves this. He loves this archetype. I will say Cameron
in Titanic, would this be Fabrizio? Is that who we're thinking of? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just have a question. Can we get like the way we kind of yada yada the whole like memory and emotions implant thing. Can we yada yada how Spider is breathing on the planet? Because it stresses me out when he's wearing the mask.
Wow, like, Ariel anti-mask.
What do
right
you mean?
Now.
Oh, wow.
This is not good. This is not good.
Josh, is there anybody
cancel him? Cancel him.
No, but
it stresses me out. I'm like, how much oxygen does he have? He's stuck in the middle of nowhere.
It takes in Pandora air and converts it into oxygen. It's unlimited.
Yeah. I kept expecting that to be a problem.
Yeah, him lose his mask. Yeah.
That's what I'm worried about. It's too stressful. Like, Neytiri, that would have been the most evil thing Neytiri could do is ask anything, just take his mask while he wasn't looking.
Oh, that would have been good, actually. Yeah. That would have been good drama.
And then she stares at the camera like, oops.
Yeah, but that also would have been too touchy. I don't think we can do that. The rest of the family, let's take a look at the others in the Sully family. So there's Nateem and Loak, the brothers, and Nateem is essentially designed to die, right? Like the whole point of that character is like, okay, let's develop a Sully child just enough so that when he dies, we'll be sad with the Sullies, but also so that it's like, it's not like that big of a deal, right? Like, this is sort of like a more elaborate version of, I guess, a Yellowstone spoiler. And then the first Yellowstone, they just like kill one of the kids. Call him a kid is a real, he's like a 40-year-old man. Right. But he just like gets unceremonious. And then they never talk about it again, ever, pretty much. It was a pilot, and they're like, yeah, whatever. That happened, and now it's just the rest of the family. It feels like there's some version of that here. It's like we needed to give a personal tragedy to the Sullies, but it couldn't have been someone that we were so enamored with because we would have walked out of the movie feeling more bummed than not. Like you called it the Empire Strikes Back of the franchise, Grace, but I think it's like a very soft Empire Strikes Back because it would be like, I don't know, it'd be like killing Lando in the first one, you know, before like you actually really cared about Lando.
The fact that I was way more super sad when they are burning the planet.
Yeah.
Like that first scene where they show back up and they are just like eviscerating the planet and Neytiri is like gets one of two I'm bawling my eyes out scenes. That one and then the one where Nateem dies. I was way sadder and like every time they burn the planet. So I feel like this is for me probably the weakest part of the movie is that Nateem is so not in the movie.
Yeah. Ariel, I kept waiting for him to die the whole movie. I was like, well, that's the one they're going to kill.
Really? Yeah, I guess his whole job is to just take care of Loak and be like, go take care of your brother. Go take care of your plot point. You're not in your plot right now. I need you back in your lane of taking care of your brother so that when you die later, he feels like he needs to be an adult. It is kind of a bummer, but, you know, in a movie that's like 3+ hours, you have like 5 children, you're doing such a good job with Took.
You consider Spider one of the children.
And sorry Neytiri, but I think one of them, I guess they didn't have time. They were like, sorry, we had a plot line for him, but we need to cut it out because he's just gonna die.
Okay, I had this theory that, and I shared this with you last episode, but I'll share it on the pod. So Nateem's story is sort of the, like, Loki, Jake's a bad dad. Every time Loak like comes back and he got in a fight, and then he's like, but Nateem, like, you F those kids up? He's like, yeah, I F those kids up. And they like chuckle and laugh, like, you're my favorite son ever. Yeah, you're my boy. I like you. You're a good one. It's so sad for Loak, but Loak's story is like being this outcast, always disobeying his father, going out beyond the reef, like, you know, all of this. He has this connection with the whale, which I'm not sure why his dad hates it so much. You feel like his dad would like it. My thing is, I wonder whether there's like, so Loak also gets the relationship with the reef Na'vi, the leader's daughter. I can't remember her name, but that's okay.
Saraya.
And so he gets the love story with her. I feel like it would have been more powerful for Nateem to have the love story with her and for Loak to have his thing where like he goes off and hangs out with whales. And I know, Josh, I profited that perhaps like the whale was actually a replacement for an LGBTQ storyline. They decide not to do it because this is like it's got to make money in China until they don't do it.
Can't cut out the whale.
And then you joked that I listened to your Severance podcast and you said that there was the love story of the year was in that one with Bert and I can't remember.
And Irving.
Name. And Irving. But I will posit that actually Loak and the Whale the love story of the year.
Yes.
Come at me. And so if Neteam gets the love story and Loak gets the I'm the outsider, like othered kid story, even if it's not an LGBTQ storyline, and then Neteam dies, then you have the then Rhea has the emotional thing of Neteam dying, but and then Loak has the thing of that would have just worked better, but they kind of put it all on Loak and Neteam gets nothing. He fished with his dad once.
Yeah,
the extent of his story.
Yeah, which we saw in the sort of sweet flashbacky thing by
that was cute. I like the memory.
That was nice too, of we're all back. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's nice to know, no one's really gone.
Yes.
And especially on Pandora, being able to connect to that was cool. But yeah, I do think that, Loak has been kind of set up to be the heir apparent, big main character energy in the long run, I think, for this character. Won't be at some point I feel like you could imagine Britton Dalton is going to be the one who's giving the narrations throughout the movie if something were to happen to Jake at some point. Yeah. I think at a certain point, something's got to happen to Jake.
I
feel like I don't know how far we can string this out with Jake Sully. Like at a certain point, Quaritch is offering, relatively reasonable terms, right? Mm-hmm. Just you come over here. Let me just satisfy my bloodlust. I'll kill you. And then we'll stop doing all of this. I guess they probably will just continue to raise the planet after that, but that's a kind of a future problem. So I feel like at some point Jake's probably just gonna have to walk in there and be like, "Yeah, fine, okay." I think something like that is coming.
I think
in the
sacrificing
movie.
Himself for Pandora, I think, does ultimately make some sense. Yeah,
in the mix for sure.
Yeah,
I think Loak has been set up to be like, "Okay, well, you're the guy afterwards."
Yeah,
I kept waiting for Jake to die towards the end of the movie because I was thinking, okay, maybe they want to make Neytiri the main character going forward. But I wasn't disappointed that Jake didn't die. I just kind of had come to
I think it would have been a stronger dramatic choice, I think, is to kill off Jake rather than kill off a character who was really clearly created to die. All we'll do is invest you just enough so that it'll make you a little sad when he dies, but not so sad that you won't be excited when all of the Peter Parkers show up to avenge Aunt Blank.
Can I say the idea that Neytiri was going to be the main character? I think one of my other big critiques about the Avatar franchise is we're going to go. And I get this was your point that you've said this about. Slandered the fake animals last podcast. It's just a Pandoran whale, and that's the point. That we got to save the whales on our planet, and people will only have empathy if they actually look like whales on that planet. But I do feel for going to a faraway planet, one of the coolest immersion experiences we've ever had. We're going to go to another planet, actually a moon of a planet, and we're going to be here. It's very yes, men do the stuff and the women stay home. it's a lot of Neytiri is a badass fighter, and we do see her fight a lot, but often when they're at the tribe, Jake's I'm going to work on my arrows. You make the food, honey. It's very heteronormative.
Totally.
Traditional, is why it makes a bunch of money.
The midsection of the movie, which is my favorite stuff, is all of the hangout culture with the Metakayana people. We see just the kids being kids together and hanging out with each other and hanging out with whales. And I love all of that. And I think that's really fun to get this perspective of the youths, but it really comes at the expense of the adult characters, and to your point, Grace, it comes specifically at the expense of Neytiri as well as Ronal, Kate Winslet's character, and that to me is the biggest crime. That you have Kate Winslet in your Avatar movie and you're sidelining her completely. I guess she gets to join in on the final battle.
How do we have no scenes of Neytiri and Ronal hanging out?
I was going to say,
Zoe Saldana and Kate Winslet. Come on.
It's so obvious to me, especially as we discuss it, but when I'm watching the movie, it's where's the Neytiri Ronal, I understand you.
No,
I'm going to learn from you. Even just one long scene. I know we have four minutes somewhere to carve out of here, and the two great actresses. The one thing I will say very quickly about Neytiri is I love the way, yes, I agree, it's very heteronormative, but the way she's always checking Jake and like, no, that's not what you're doing. Like, yeah, it's a little bit like the woman's doing the work and like propping the guy up to be like a good father, but also she's clearly the emotional center of their tribe, and I mean like their family, and it is nice to see her at least be the more intelligent one as in the first movie.
I also like that she's not the one who panics when the boat is sinking.
That's true.
Like she's with Tuck and she's like, yeah, we're gonna be all right, we're gonna be okay, even though you can tell she's like, I don't think we're gonna be all right,
I don't think we're gonna be okay.
But literally Jake's always like, shit, no, I'm gonna not make it, and then his son's like, dad, you gotta chill out, and it's also the son is telling him like, you got to chill out, and I'm just going to bury the fact that you told me that I got my brother killed, and I'm going to be the adult in the room right now. So LVP points Jake Sully, I think, in some of these instances.
Speaking of being on the ship, I just quickly want to say, Took has the line of the movie when she goes, oh, man, I got tied up again. It's the best. It's so good. Yeah. It's so good.
It was the only explanation for, or it was the only like good thing that could be said after all of us watching it. We're like, what the hell? How are they tied up again?
Yeah. I did a podcast, Mediapedia. We did a podcast on representation. It was really great. And we talked about these, like, the
tests. A post-show recaps patron exclusive podcast that you can get when you sign up, patreon.com/post-show recaps.
We asked big questions about the media. So the podcast we did is Representation Matters, but why? So we explored some of this stuff. And we talked about these tests that happen in movies that they've created, and one of them being the Bechdel test. And I was thinking, after, because I just watched Avatar The Way of Water twice, I don't know that it passes the Bechdel test, which is a little, again, my point is, like, I really like this movie. I really like it. I think it's great. I enjoyed it a lot, immensely. I think it says it does a lot of like revolutionary stuff. Like the fact that there's a movie that's basically like, yeah, the American military complex is the big enemy of a movie, the most successful movie of all time. That's great. That's awesome. That's cool. But I think in looking back at this movie, I'm not sure it passes the Bechdel test, which is a little disappointing for one of the like most successful movies and one of the most successful movie franchises of all time. So yeah.
Yeah, I think I don't think that anyone has accused like the story structure of these movies of being like particularly innovative.
Right.
You know, so I think like there's a way in which like it's just very archetypal.
Which is why I think people enjoy them too. I think that's fine. Yeah.
Easy to watch in some ways. Yeah, yes. For sure. Maybe less easy depending on how you feel about the frame rate. But
and they feel they feel, to that point, a little bit from both of you, they feel nostalgic in a way, because
they feel like a movie that
should have come out long ago, but obviously with technology and everything, and it's a good feeling for the most part. But then you think about like it's kind of standing on the shoulders of some of these not so great tropes that we're getting at, and it's kind of like, okay, there's a way to like nod to them and evolve them, but you know,
if they don't do a whole lot more with Nate Tiery and Kate Winslet in movie 3, I'm pissed.
Especially
because
it
seems like they're just staying, right? Like we're here, we're not going, we've been invited in, this is our home now, we've adopted the Way of Water, and this is where we'll be. This is, you know, our son is buried here, like this is where we will live now. That means that, you know, at least between movies or over the course of Avatar 3, Zoe Saldana and Kate Winslet, they have to be like really tight, or at least they have to have a dynamic.
A scene would be good. They don't get a scene. They do interact once. They both hiss at each other. I forgot.
That's true. Yeah.
Hiss. I love a hiss.
Yeah.
But very quickly, I do want to talk about as we're on the topic of amazing women on this cast, or amazing women characters specifically. Saraya, and to your point, Josh, about like that middle section where we really just kind of get to live with these people and see how they interact. And this is, I think, getting at what I said about it being like feeling like a season of television. Like you really do get many moments. Sorry, Nateam, except you. We do get a lot of moments with these characters and like really get to know them. So by the time we get to the end of the movie, it all feels very well earned. But one of my favorite scenes is Saraya and Loak talking, and when he's kind of like, you know, spreading his angst around, blah blah blah, being annoying, and she's like, and he's like, oh, my father doesn't see me, blah blah blah, and she says, I see you, and she for her to take like one of the most well-worn lines from this universe, especially in the first movie, and make it sound so real and empathetic and just wonderful, like I love this actress, Bailey Bass.
She's from Interview with the Vampire, and she's going to be a superstar.
That's awesome. And she's no less superstar twinkle from her here in that scene, because I think it's something that they showed in the trailer a whole bunch. So there's a lot of pressure on it to even work within the movie. And I think it's one of my favorite moments.
I loved it. I thought it was really good too. I like a lot of the characters that we get from the Water Tribe. I think that like a lot of the like this was where I really appreciated the like the face acting and like the, yeah. the facial performance capture so much that I could really see like I could transpose. I forget the name of Scott Farkas's toady sidekick in A Christmas Story, but like I could see like that flunky on the face of one of the kids, and so like you just like got this like real like they got across really quickly like this is bad news. These kids are going to be bullying our team, our characters, and then there's also still room though within that for them to make the bond and ultimately like get through it. And it was, I forget the name of the guy that Jake has to befriend in the first movie. Starts with a T, but I'm blanking on, but the one who sadly gets thrown off the ship. So I really like that there was room to grow. And I think that a lot of that is, it's not so much in the story as it is like, I think in the performance, like you get that youthful energy that really comes across through the kid actors and through the kid characters that I think is really, really good. And I think Rhea is a great example of that, Ariel. I think you're totally right.
The mocap stuff.
His name was Sute.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Sute,
yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The mocap stuff works so well here. Like the scenes where they're like where they like come under like from out of the water. It looks so good. Like the fact that these are like not they look like Na'vi people like swimming in water is incredible. Like there's a scene where like Took comes up and she's like, "You guys gotta like wait for us. We can't hold our breath that long." Like God, it looks so good. And then like the underwater stuff of like all the CGI below the water.
Really
this
great.
For me is like the most. It's vibes energy because it like it's fun. It's just such a like a hangout moment of the movie, but it also works because it's like, yeah, I want to hang out there. It looks incredible. It
looks cool. Looks cool. Yeah, for sure. Got to talk about whales.
I was just about to say, Josh, we have to talk about the
talk
whale.
About whales. Gotta talk one about whales. Got to talk about my guy, Piacon. Yeah.
One of my favorite visual moments, actually, speaking of whales, was, and to your point a little bit, Grace, when I think it's Loak, right, is with his BFF Piacon, and he's like drift the way they kind of invert the above water and the below water where he like touches the top of the water surface, but it looks like he's touching the like if he was on the surface world and touching the water. It looks so cool.
Yeah. I loved the scene where they're just like swimming around. He's like holding his hurt fin, like his lucky fin in Finding Nemo parlance. Just like swimming around Pandora with my space whale friend. Like it's just such a wonderful scene, the two of them together. And then I think for me, the biggest surprise of the movie is when Loak's like, "So tell me, like, why are you an outcast?" And then the space whale responds with subtitled dialogue. He goes, and what it is, is too painful.
Too painful.
I can't get into it. But if you ever feel brave enough to like go inside my mouth and make the bond with my hang ball, like you could see my terrible, twisted, dark memories. And like, I love that that's just like a straightforward thing in the universe of Avatar.
You're so mean to this whale. You're so mean. He's just trying to fight the other people. He brings all the people and they all die. Yeah. He's the only one who gets away. And then they're like, well, he's an outcast. Okay,
I can't talk about it, but my hang ball will tell you everything if you just want to plug into my hang ball.
I kept waiting for Grace for like the big reveal of he did something horrible. Like, I know. Sit down. I'm going to tell you what he did. Yeah, but then nothing came. And I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, I was a drug dealer. I did like a lot of like, bad stuff.
Did this? I've
been killing other whales for Emery too.
Yeah, I've been sucking out their brains and selling them to whalers.
I am immortal.
He has his own money stash of all the money he's made from the other whales' liquids. Did this, like, to be clear, I love animals and I love whales.
Sounds like a big start. Go on.
From famous anti-masker, Ariel has to really preface this.
I was trying to remember what Grace was saying last episode.
It's when I'm slandering the animals. Strong heart, Ariel. Go ahead. You love animals.
Thank you, Grace. Strong heart. But like when the first, to your point, Josh, when it is first revealed that like the whales are going to be able to communicate and in fact have their own subtitles, I kind of looked around. I was like, no effing way. Like, wait, is this really happening? Like, in a way that was both like very exciting and also I was left questioning like, do I like this? And ultimately I did like it, but in the very first moment I was like, is this dumb? Do I hate this? Is this cool? Oh my god, the whales. Oh my god,
it's like, too, that's painful. Yeah, just I'm not big sure how Eeyore energy.
I'm not sure how Loak speaks well is the only, but whatever, it's fine. He was using the sign language that they use when they swim underwater. Mm-hmm. So that's whatever, it's fine.
I loved whale vision as well. Was great, where like you could see everything sort of like in the sepia tones, and like he's like unscrewing the harpoon and everything, and like you get from that like viewpoint the whale eye lens that like you're looking out at Loak, and like as you're like rooted in the whale's perspective, I really felt like, gosh, I really like this kid. And so like I felt like that as me, space whale. Yeah. I like this guy. Yeah. So it just like got me into the space whale's perspective in a way that I thought was really, really wonderful. I also love that then he's just used as an action hero.
Okay, Piacon,
but in a way that is so amazing that I'm just going to jump on your ship, and that's going to cause all kinds of problems for everyone involved here. Throwing a whale in the middle of your action scene and then using a whale as your iceberg to Titanic, your whale hunting vessel in the James Cameron movie, gold. All of this is worth more than whale brains. Really, really good stuff. I thought the final set piece and the way that it incorporates everything about the movie up to that point and builds on so much of James Cameron's own cinematic history.
Yes.
Incredibly good.
We get introduced by Piacon because he stops the Jaws from killing Loak. Piacon kills the shark, so we get the Jaws thing. That's and then we get the Titanic homage with the ship. I also got to say, Piacon has the kill. I actually don't think it's a kill, and I actually think if someone's bound to show up in the third movie, it's Australian scientist.
One-armed whale hunter is your bet for who's coming next?
Because he did not die. He got his... And so this kill is incredible, where Piacon like moves out of the way of a harpoon, then uses the harpoon rope to like basically tie up everybody on the ship, pull it so that it like starts like breaking off the top half of the ship, and then the Australian scientist guy gets his arm stuck, and you can see it like tightening.
And goes flying.
My God, so good. It's like my
Josh, this got... A cheer in our theater. Yeah,
huge, same. Huge pop. Huge pop for the guy losing his arm, for sure.
So I think he's back. I
don't know how he survives that.
One arm. He's going to come back. You're going to have the one-armed bad guy.
He's Piacon's like spirit human counterpart. Like they're gonna make the bond, but it's just gonna be darkness.
He's gonna need medical treatment immediately. I know that they just have Dr. Norm Spellman on speed dial.
Who can save him? Who can save him? The Na'vi. He can save him, and then he'll go back. He'll have a bionic arm, just like Edie Falco. He'll be able to drink coffee from it. Don't you see him as the bad guy in number two? Like a bad guy in number two, where he comes back and he has like a mechanical arm.
I hate it. I'm done with the Australian whale hunter. I hope that was it.
About Australian whale hunter.
Yeah,
is like, okay, we're gonna have Australian whale hunter, and his sidekick will be Jermaine Clements. That man is from New Zealand. Is he allowed to have a New Zealand accent? Absolutely not. He must have a bad American.
Yeah, it's possible though that was just that was a choice. It was like Jermaine Clement's like, can I just do this? And
I love Jermaine Clement.
Hearing him speak in an American accent, I just felt bad. I was like, poor guy, this sucks. Of all accents,
it was still nice to see him. I agree.
It was wonderful to see.
Loved his wardrobe. I loved like his sort of like his like science vibe. I thought was very good. Dry.
I wish for no reason he just had showed up as his What We Do in the Shadows character.
That would have been fun as well. That would have been great. I hope we see more of him for sure. I think that would be super, super fun. Any other thoughts on like the final action set piece of the movie? I loved how clear it was. Even when it starts getting dark with just like the explosions and the fire illuminating everything. And really James Cameron once again getting us to feel like the claustrophobia of your characters almost drowning in like a sinking vessel, Titanic style. It's just so amazing he was able to do that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing I said in the spoiler-free pod is that I thought it was really well, almost like choreographed in a sense of the way it feels really frenetic and how he sets up these moments where they're like two characters are together or like four of them are together, but two get split off. And it all just felt really natural and organic. And it's happening because of the chaos of this ship, like turning over and sinking. And then where it sort of ends up with Spider saving Miles and Loak saving his father and then Kiri saving Neytiri and Took. I just thought it was like all super, super well done. Like this is the stuff that I think like if he's there, there is pieces of like his story, James Cameron's storytelling that I think he is really, really good at in terms of like making sure that all of these moments feel important and that they all kind of happen at the same time. And that feels like, yeah, it makes sense how this happened. I thought it was like super, super well done, the final scene.
Yeah. Make the bond. I agree. I think it was very, it's very harrowing. It really feels well earned after that entire season of television. You're like, wow, what's going to happen to these people? Who's going to die? And it really does feel like anybody could die. But the thing that I keep coming back to is the fact that Kiri by that point has kind of started to understand her powers a little more, or like understand how capable she is of doing certain things. So she uses like these bioluminescent, like small jellyfish type things. They're like the same flowers that fly in the first one, Neytiri, mm-hmm. and then whatever, but they're underwater. And she rescues, or like she points them in the direction of Neytiri and Took specifically. And I kept thinking that she was going to send them to find Jake also, but it kind of didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like it seemed in the moment like she prioritized her mother and her
sister.
Yeah,
I thought they were going everywhere.
I'm totally cool with that. But it was just really funny. Like, sorry, I can't help you, Dad. I'm just going to save Mom and Took.
Yeah. I love the jellyfish like cape is great.
Jellyfish cape is awesome. We need that on Earth. And I just suggest an innovation, make it plaid and flannel.
Yes. Yeah. That's right.
The loincloth. Yeah.
It's so good.
I love that. I thought that was really great. And it just looked cool. And there was something like ethereal and like angelic to Kiri in that moment, which is obviously by design. And then she puts that on Neytiri. It was very, very, very cool. The visuals were amazing. Obviously, it's just a thing you could say broadly about these movies. Mm-hmm. The other piece of this is, so Spider saves Colonel Quaritch. Is he Colonel Quaritch anymore? What do we even call
you
this?
You think he's
guy?
Got? He's been dishonorably discharged.
Yeah, he's been demoted.
He already. He always calls Jake. What does he call him?
Corporal.
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 You hear me? Yeah, I think you hear me.
He saves Quaritch, and I know that we're like, we already talked about, is Spider going to be the bad guy ultimately? Can I toss out a theory / prediction that I think we could end up in at some point in time? Is Quaritch, having learned his lesson, some kind of sacrifice play, and his body being an avatar body and being genetically linked to Spider, that Spider could eventually somehow inherit Quaritch's avatar body?
That's pretty good. They give... Ooh. Spider's name is Miles, right? His name is Miles. I feel like a little bit, maybe just as I'm thinking, like, I guess we never learn who his mother is.
Apparently you do in the comic book. There was like a comic book tie-in. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
His last name is not Quaritch. It's Socorro. So, that makes
Quaritch Socorro.
That makes sense to me that the DNA that's how he sacrificed himself. Like, you
think it might need to be like he needs to be more of a genetic match, but I don't know. This is just a thought.
It kind of that really puts a big plot hole in Jake's.
Yeah, the House of Sully rules meet. You know, it's got to be identical, but
I don't know.
Anyway,
anything else from Avatar 2: The Way of Water that we want to make sure we express here in the spoiler filled version of it? I do love that, like, calling in Max and Dr. Norm is the thing that causes all these problems. It's like, Jake, you shouldn't just call them on speed dial. The whole point was you were disappearing. Of course this is going to be picked up.
Yeah. Right. But then when the child is injured, like, it did make sense that like this would be one of the exceptions to the rule, at least for him, of like, oh, you know, someone's going to die.
Yeah.
My child. Do we think Edie Falco's character, General Ardmore, made the bond with her coffee mug?
So she uses the exosuit to drink coffee. Like, the way that the exosuits work is, like, you can pantomime the stuff, but, like, she has to put the coffee mug in the hand. I would be so nervous that I'd spill the coffee.
Me too.
And also, doesn't
just dump it on my head?
Doesn't the mug need to be, like, gigantic? Gundo Gigantic to like in order.
Maybe she needs, well, running a whole city, Ariel, on Pandora requires like a jumbo size. I think.
Problem for me is big goal. And I was saying this, like, if you, because you have to eat to motion. So normally you would motion to your mouth, but that would put the coffee cup over her head. Yeah. So she's going to have to, like, mimic it to her, like, her chest, basically, in order
for the
coffee.
It's going to hit you in the face.
Yeah. You would think it's going to hit you in the face.
Edie Falco's, I mean, I was going to say underutilized, but just the fact that she drinks, gets to drink coffee out of the XS Allison suit is pretty great. She also gets to do some, like, boxing in it at the beginning. She gets to do full-on punishment, like you know, she's like spinning Spider until his nose bleeds. She's pretty bad in this movie. I hope she's more of the big bad.
I want her to be the Thanos of the Avatar universe. I was really hoping for a post-credit scene at the end of this one where she with her robot hand goes, fine, I'll do it myself.
Dr. Coffee Cup.
Yeah, I thought that would have been good.
The disrespect to Edie Falco that she talks like that.
I love Edie Falco.
Hold on, hold on. Can
we're
get a
up to the final season of The Sopranos in our rerun.
Can we get a rerun on the Edie Falco impression? Sorry?
Fine, I'll do it myself. I don't know. It's not my best. Tony! Yeah, I can't quite do
Tony.
It.
Tony, yeah.
Can't quite do it. Love Edie Falco.
It sounds more like Wallace Shawn.
Wait till I get going! Yeah, I don't know. Well, I can't wait until she gets going. I want it to happen.
I wish we had more time today because I do feel like an impression off of I See You. So if I could just hear you quickly, you're Holly Hunter, I See You. If I could
I See You.
Oh, see? So good. Yeah. So good.
Holly Hunter in here would be
I agree.
Quite all right. Yeah. Quite all right. Would be fine. I'm sure that there's a ton more that I could say about Avatar. We are a little pressed for time, so I think we have to begin the wrap-up process. But I really enjoyed this. I think that they left a lot for the sequels to cover. I hope that the movie does well enough to warrant multiple sequels and not just the one, though I am down for at least just the one. And it seems like at the very least we will get that. It would be a surprise if we didn't. Any final thoughts on Avatar, Ariel, that you want to express before we close out?
Took, I love you. Yes. I hope you're not an annoying teen when I see you next.
Oh my god, no,
because that would diminish my love for you.
That would be bad. That would be bad. Grace, any parting shots?
I just want to give one more shout out for Kate Winslet breaking the world record for holding her water under,
what was that for?
I think filming
that's
gotta
be an Avatar
3
thing, right?
Holding, yeah, because she doesn't swim much, right?
No, so whatever she did that for has to be for an upcoming scene that we have yet to see.
Yeah,
I didn't see her.
Maybe
I didn't
was a
see
cut
her.
Scene of her teaching Neytiri how to swim underwater, and they just
maybe.
Cut it.
Yeah.
Imagine they cut the scene where she broke the world record.
So like it's available as an extra.
James, come on. Yeah. No, James did it again. I think I'm sad that the movie, you know, I'll preface this, but like I don't really care how much money movies make other than that I want to keep talking about movies. So please, the film industry should not die.
please don't die.
Yeah. Please don't die. Mm-hmm. But I'm a little bit sad that it, you know, but I do hope people go see it. I think it's really fun. It's kind of a tough sell if you're going to like bring your kids like 3.5 hours or whatever. But it's really fun. It's really worth it seeing it on the big screen. So, an enjoyable movie. So,
I had a very good time. Yeah. I had a very good time. So that's going to do it for the Avatar coverage. That's far from it for post-show recaps theater. What do y'all have going on here in the podcast feed? I've heard that the best movies of the year have been announced.
We did our takes, our big, we gave our MVPs, our 5-star movies and such. So we did a year in review, and it's a big week for spoiler free versions of pods, because we're also later this week going to be covering Glass Onion, full spoilers. We already released our spoiler free version, full spoilers with the wonderful Ally Lasher.
Ooh, so, super fun. That's
we
great.
Thought we'd get a lawyer on to like detect it out. That doesn't totally make, I guess
detect.
It does make sense.
Detect. We needed her to detect.
Yeah, so detections right. probably well, need to happen. I always like, thought of Ally Lasher as the Benoit Blanc of post-show recap.
Yeah,
so
me too. It's more like a...
Call her in when we really need someone to figure this out.
It would be more like, now that we've seen it, would this try? Would like the case hold up in court? Is what we'll get. run through. Yeah. And lots more movies, Ariel. Right? There's a lot.
Apparently, there are going to be movies in the new year as well, and I didn't know. Oh. You didn't warn me.
You thought it was our series finale?
I was like, what?
You thought it was done.
When they pushed the movies to January, I was like, what does that mean?
What does that mean? Late?
Well, if you want to know what the movies have in store for you in 2023, I recommend you keep subscribed to the Post Show Recaps Theater podcast feed and that you're following at That Other Ariel. Is it The Other Ariel?
That Other Ariel.
It's That Other Ariel at High From Grace as well. And you won't miss a thing here on Post Show Recaps Theater. Anything else that either of you want to do quick shouts?
Well, we're doing the Dark watch through, spoiler filled. Watch all of Dark. It's well worth your time.
On Netflix.
Come hang out. Yeah, then come hang out with Rich, Ariel, and myself, covering the full thing episode by episode as we go through. So that's PSR Goes Dark. It's, I think, just a beautifully – it's my favorite scripted TV show of all time. It's so perfect. So
very fun. On. The rewatch is starting real soon, right? I think like real a week soon. Away.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so you got some time. Got some time to get on board. Plenty more happening on Post Show Recaps. The 2022 in Review podcast continues. If you want to subscribe to that, postshowrecaps.com/2022inReview. If you want to contribute to the audience survey, we would certainly appreciate that, postshowrecaps.com/survey2022. And other than that, so much more happening on the network. Make sure you're subscribed and you won't miss a thing. Until next time, everybody, we see you later. Bye.